If you would open your Bibles to the book of Nehemiah. It'll be right after Ezra. First and Second Chronicles and Ezra and Nehemiah. It'll be right before the book of Esther in our Old Testaments. If you're visiting, we are so proud that you blessed us with your presence and hope that you will feel that we have honored God when you leave today. I believe it's Sarah Michelle Gellar is the star of the television series Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I've never actually seen the series, just a few advertisements. What I found of interest, though, was there was a recent article. She had won an award for some of her humanitarian service. She's involved with a group called CARE, for example, in which she travels the world and goes into war-torn countries and works with women in those countries and tries to help them to deal with some of the problems and difficulties that they're facing. What was interesting is after receiving this particular award, different folks were doing interviews with her, and I happened to read an article written based on one of those interviews. It was interesting listening to her talk about American society and what she saw in other countries. She talked about the fact that in our country, of course, she's an actress and acting is a part of her profession. But as she looked at her life and she looked at Hollywood and she looked at our society, she says basically acting is almost a full-time thing. In other words, you're acting all the time. Everybody is wearing faces. Everybody is acting. Everybody is pretending to be somebody else. And she talked about the fact, she used this phrase to describe America. She says we're a gluttonous society. And she talked about how she went into these other countries and often during wartime and poverty, and they got all these struggles that the society is dealing with, from just having food on the table to worrying about their home being blown up, and how grateful and appreciative they were for the simplest of things in life. Now, whatever you think of her or whatever, I do think that challenges us to think about ourselves and to think about our world. I truly believe that United States is the greatest nation on the planet, and I'm grateful to be a citizen of the United States. But I think any nation, any family, any congregation, any individual, that gets to a point that we can't look at ourselves and evaluate ourselves and think about how we could be better, is destined not only for mediocrity, but I think in the long term, decline and maybe even death. So I want to challenge each of us, not so much as a nation, but as individuals and as families, to look at ourselves. This morning I want us to think about give or take. What is the mission of my life? Give or take. Here's what she, I think, was saying in that article. She was saying that by and large, we're here to get. We're a gluttonous nation. And then she described those who are grateful for anything they receive. So each of us will have to answer that question and address that accusation in our own personal lives. And I think somewhere we can go to maybe let it be laid out in picture form before us is in the book of Nehemiah. So I'd like to read the first few verses of Nehemiah chapter 5, and let's talk about to take or to give. Nehemiah chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. Now there was a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, "We, our sons and our daughters are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live." There were others who said, "We are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses that we may get grain because of the famine." Also there were those who said, "We have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and on our vineyards. Now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, our children are like their children. Yet behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves. And some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we are helpless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." Then I was very angry when I had heard their outcry and these words. That's Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. Let's take just a few moments this morning and talk about the question, am I here to take or am I here to give? Why am I here? I wanted to emphasize that the goal of this lesson is not to say that folks can't make money or that banks can't charge interest. It's talking about an attitude of life and how I do what I do and why I do what I do. When I get up in the morning, is the mission of my day to get all the stuff I can accumulated for me and my family, or is the mission of my day to see how many people I can bless? And I think you see both of those attitudes in Nehemiah chapter 5. So let's focus on to take. As we do so, I want to divide it into two parts. First of all, I want us to talk about the crises, and then I want us to talk about the crimes. So look at Nehemiah's day. Nehemiah came back to Jerusalem somewhere around 445 or 444 B.C. So I've said before, remember that when you're dealing with B.C., as the numbers get lower, you're getting closer to us. When you're dealing with A.D., as the numbers get bigger, they're getting closer to us. So 444 B.C. is going to be a little closer to today than 445 B.C. But in roughly a little over 440 years before Christ came to earth, Nehemiah, who was an important Persian official, he was cupbearer for the king. It would have been a very wealthy position because literally you're putting your life on the line on a daily basis to make sure nobody's poisoning the king. And so as he did that job, he became no doubt wealthy over time, or at least did well enough that he didn't have to worry tremendously about money. But at the beginning of the book of Nehemiah, he learns that the wall of Jerusalem is still down. Now, the reason I say still down is because this wall was torn down just a little over 140 years prior to this by the Babylonians. Since then, the Babylonians have been conquered by the Persians, and Nehemiah works for a Persian king. When he heard that after 140 years the wall is still down and that the people are still struggling, he actually was sad in the countenance of a king. Literally, that was a life-threatening thing to do. You just weren't sad in front of the king. Your job when you came in to serve for the king was to be happy, to smile, to build the king up. You know, he's the king, you just serve him, your problems are not his problems. He doesn't care if you're sad today, your job is to be happy in front of the king. But Nehemiah was sad in front of the king, and the king asked him about it, and so he prayed to God, and he told the king about the problem in Jerusalem. And the king not only allowed him to go back to Jerusalem, Nehemiah ended up being appointed governor of Jerusalem and served as such at least one term of 12 years, and it seems he may have gone back to Babylon and then come back and served another term. But he was also allowed to have wood from the king's forest and was able to be away to get that wall rebuilt. So the book of Nehemiah is about two things. It's about the rebuilding of the wall of Jerusalem and the reforming of the faith of the people of Israel. Now, what's significant, what's going to happen is the people are going to rebuild that wall in 52 days. It is an absolutely amazing feat. Some believe what's in chapter 5 takes place after the wall is completed. But in my opinion, because of where it's placed in the text, I believe it takes place during the building of the wall. You've got multiple crises going on here. You've got a nation that has been conquered. Their city was leveled 140 years before, and even though their temple was finally rebuilt, the city, to a large extent, is still in ruins. The wall is broken down, so they have no protection from their enemies. They are at the mercy, among others, of the Samaritans and the other surrounding peoples and tribes. Times are tough economically. Times are tough socially. You know, they're in the middle of literally a building decline, of a famine. They're just struggling to make ends meet. In the middle of all of this, they've decided to rebuild the wall. They're trying to rebuild their city, and in so doing, rebuild their future. But they've got enemies in that process. Sanballat and Tobiah and others are endeavoring to stop the building of the wall. And so in chapter 4, it describes a picture of how they had to work. And as they built that wall, they literally had some building and others standing on guard as soldiers. They had folks working with a weapon in one hand and a tool in the other for the building of the wall, or a trowel, or whatever they needed to build that wall. In other words, they're dealing with an economic crisis, they're dealing with a famine, They're dealing with potential warfare. In all of this, they're trying to rebuild the wall of their city. I mean, it's not one crisis. It's a series of crises they're in the middle of. And so what it is they're trying to rebuild this wall in threat of invasion every day, that suddenly an outcry comes to the attention of Nehemiah. A crime has been committed. A social crime. A moral crime. In fact, multiple crimes have been committed. But it seems that some people were taking advantage of the situation. You may think of, you know, I'm reminded over and over that things in the Bible times are not so different than today. I want you to think about when our country or our world is in a time of crisis. Think of how many times there will be people there to take advantage of it. Think about, for example, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and all the problems they had with price gouging on those who had big equipment to move things, or folks who had gas stations on raising prices. In other words, they went beyond the prices necessary because of the lowering of available crude oil and those kinds of things, to the point of just trying to make extra money off of the misery of others. And I know a lot of states have laws to try to curb that kind of stuff. I know one place I read, for example, New Jersey has a law that a gas station can only raise the price once every 24 hours. So when a crisis hits or a series of crises hit, they can't just keep raising the price all day long and get as much money as they want. But I want to read for you something that President Bush said in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina because of some evidence of price gouging and taking advantage of the situation and taking advantage of others. He says, "I think there ought to be zero tolerance of people breaking the law during an emergency such as this, whether it be looting or price gouging at the gasoline pump or taking advantage of charitable giving and insurance fraud." That was an interview he did, I think, with ABC. But I think he describes the kinds of things that can happen in a time of crisis. Well, go back in time about 2,500 years and you look at Nehemiah chapter 5, and it's really not that much different. They're in the middle of a series of crises, and those who had were taking advantage of those who did not have. Now, if you wanted to kind of look at some of the laws that relate to this, you might look over in Exodus chapter 21 in the verses 1 through 6. You can look in Exodus chapter 22. I want to say it's around verse 47. Don't quote me on that, but in Exodus chapter 22 is where he talks about two things. He talks about not charging interest for a fellow Jew who is poor. And also, if you take something in pledge, like if somebody says, will you loan me $10? And they say, okay, what can you give me as a pledge, a guarantee for this loan? He says, hey, I've got this $10 coat. And he says, okay, and he takes the $10 coat. Well, the law said that at the end of the day you had to give him his coat back, because that was not only his coat to keep him warm, that was his covers at night when he went to the bed. So you could only have his collateral for the loan could only be kept during the day. Okay? And you didn't keep it. In other words, the point was that you didn't put people in an impossible situation. And again, as you deal with most of these loans, he's not necessarily talking about a business loan, somebody that just wants to advance, start a new business and those kinds of things. He's dealing with people who are getting loans to survive. He says you don't take advantage of those situations. You could also look over in Leviticus chapter 25 and elsewhere to see some of the laws that tie in to what's going on here in Nehemiah chapter 5. But I don't want to get into all of that. But basically what was happening is, you had some people who didn't own property at all, and they were having to borrow money to get food to feed their families, and they really had no collateral. Okay, they had nothing to back up the loan. They didn't have land to mortgage or anything. You had others who had mortgaged all of their property and all their land to get food to feed their families, and they didn't have money then, or didn't have land. Apparently others may have actually taken possession of some of these properties where they couldn't even, you know, grow food on it to pay back the loan and to feed their families. You had others who had gotten to the point, and part of this is not only did they need food to eat, but they're trying to pay their taxes to the king of Persia. And some of them had gotten to the point that they basically mortgaged everything else, and now they were mortgaging their children. And that was not a terribly uncommon thing in the ancient world, depending on where you lived. And there were two reasons they did that. One is they were assured their kids got to eat. And the other thing was that their kids could work off the debt, or they could have time while that child was working for somebody else as their slave, then they could try to make money and work off the debt. And they said, you know, it's not only that we're at the point of this potentially happening, but it says it's already happening. And usually they started enslaving the daughters first, and then they went to the sons. And so he talks about this is already happening in our society. And so you've got folks in the middle of a struggle to survive, and you've got those who have money who are basically taking the land and enslaving the children of those who don't have money. They're price gouging, if you will. They're taking advantage of the situation. So you have a group of people who look at life as an opportunity to take what you can. Then in contrast to that, you have Nehemiah and his fellow workers. It seems to me as I look at Nehemiah, his mission is not to take. His mission is to give. As we look at the giving, first of all, I want you to look at the confrontation. I think again of that quote just a few moments ago from President Bush when he said we should have zero tolerance. Nehemiah is a really good example of zero tolerance. Nehemiah was extremely upset about what was happening in their society. Now, it's interesting as you read down through this, I want to say it's down around verse 10, you can check that. Nehemiah and his servants were also loaning out money. But it seems in the process of their loaning out money, maybe they weren't taking quite the advantage that others were. But basically what he said, and it's hard to tell, this word usury is in a lot of our Bibles, and there's a lot of disagreement over what that means. We know that pledges were part of the problem. We're not as clear how much interest was the part of the problem. In other words, some people were charging interest to their fellow Jews on loans that they were getting just to feed their families. That is a clear violation of God's law from Exodus chapter 22. Also, it seems that not only were they charging interest, some were charging incredible amounts, and also they were keeping the pledges. Okay, remember when somebody put something down on a loan, if it's a fellow Jew, you didn't keep that. All right, you gave it back to them because they had to have that to survive. So it seems that they were keeping these things. And so whatever it was they were doing, they were taking advantage of the people who were struggling to survive. And so Nehemiah says, you know, we've been loaning money out as well. But he says, we need to stop all that we're doing. He might have been doing some things, but it doesn't seem that he was doing things that maybe were a violation of the law. But basically, he said, look at the situation we're in. And the emphasis all through this is on the fact that we're brothers and sisters. We're family. We ought to take better care of each other. We ought to treat each other better than this. Instead of taking advantage of each other in a time of crisis, we ought to be doing everything we can to get each other through this. And so basically what he said is, let's give the pledges back. If you've been charging interest, don't do it. Return the interest. We need to help each other through this crisis. Now, if you go on later in the book, it seems that they may have adjusted some things after they had gotten through the crisis. But he says, we need to pull together. And it's only if we pull together that we're going to make it. And so he confronts the people. He tells them they need to change and stop what they're doing. The people agree to what he is asking them to do. And then what I find of special interest in verses 14 and following is look at the example of Nehemiah himself. I think one reason that Nehemiah had such a powerful influence, one reason I think at the beginning of this chapter that he was able to tell all the money lenders and landowners, we need to stop taking advantage of people, one reason I think they listened to him is because he practiced what he preached. And folks, that's a very, very hard thing to do. I want you to think about the people that you respect the most. I want you to think about the people you would be most likely to follow and listen to. Are they people who say one thing and do something else? Are they people who tell you to do something but they won't do it themselves? Didn't Jesus talk about the religious leaders of his day and say that they were those who put burdens on others that they themselves would not bear? The fact is, Nehemiah tried to practice what he preached. And in the latter portion of the chapter, he gives an example of that. Two examples in particular. First of all, he talks about the governor's food allowance. Now remember that Nehemiah had some income from when he was cupbearer of the king. Don't know how much of that income continued. He may have been living off the income of the past. I don't know if he had continued income. But because he was governor of the land, he was owed an allowance of food and so forth from the people. He was also owed an allowance of money. He talks about 40 shekels here. Most folks think that this is about a pound of silver a day. So as he talks about this, this was owed to him. He had right to this as governor. Because as governor, there were a number of political responsibilities with that. Part of what he did is he had to entertain, he had to make sure that the leading officials in the land were fed. And then as foreign dignitaries came into town, it was his job to feed, house, and provide for them. And he mentions at least 150 dignitaries in the passage if you read the latter portion of Nehemiah chapter 5. And based on the things that were prepared every day, some folks think that he may have fed upwards of 600 to 800 people a day when you take not only the dignitaries, but all the other soldiers and servants and others that would have been involved in this process. And so he is spending massive amounts of money, feeding countless people every day. But he said because of the crisis they were in, because of how hard it was on the people, he says in verse 14, neither I nor my kinsmen have eaten the governor's food allowance. Down the latter portion of verse 18, yet for all this I did not demand the governor's food allowance because the servitude was heavy on this people. And then another example of what he was willing to do is he talks about the fact that when it came to the building of the wall, he and his servants participated right along with everybody else in the building of the wall. In other words, he was not only willing to give his money. You see, sometimes giving our money is the easiest thing to do. Okay? Let's just go buy it for him, or let's just go give somebody else the money to do it for him. It's another thing to roll up our sleeves and go over to their house and say, let me help you. Now, he is the governor of the land. He is an official representative of the king of Persia. He could have come into town and said, you guys get busy building, send me your money, send me some food, take care of me, and I'll check on you every day or so and make sure you're getting the job done. And that's not what he did. But he and his servants didn't demand anything from the people, whether it's food or money, even though in his position he had a right to it. And they rolled up their sleeves and they participated in building on the wall as well. Now remember, he and his servants, they don't own land here. In fact, he specifically says, we didn't buy land. He says, we're not here to get stuff. We're not here to accumulate land. We're not here to accumulate food and stockpiles of things to eat. We're not here to get money. We're not here to let you do all the work and work for us. We're here to stand alongside you and let us work together in the building of this wall and overcoming the struggles that we're facing. He was not living to take, but he was living to give. I find it interesting, if I look over in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 20, verse 35, Paul quotes Jesus when he says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And Jesus is the ultimate example of giving. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 6, it says, he gave his life as a ransom for all. I'm reminded of John 3:16, for God so loved the world, what? That he gave. And so Jesus was a giver. He embodied giving. Just as Nehemiah tried to embody giving in his day, Jesus Christ came to embody giving for all days, for all time, and he calls on us to be givers. Sometimes just read through, we don't have time this morning, go home, I encourage you and read Luke chapter 6 verses 24 through 38. Because there it describes the giving lifestyle that we're focusing on today. Luke chapter 6 verses 24 through 38. And he ends that section by saying, give and it will be given to you. That ought to be the attitude of my life. Throughout that he says, give forgiveness to your enemies. Give of the one who asks. Give and don't seek interest. Don't take advantage of those who are struggling. Jesus is there saying basically the same thing that Nehemiah did in Nehemiah chapter 5. I don't know if you heard about this, but a few years ago, they sold a grilled cheese sandwich that was supposed to have Mary, the mother of Jesus, somehow on it on eBay for $28,000. I understand that there's a guy down in Florida who has a piece of granite that he got from Brazil that is, and I saw it online. I thought about putting it up here, but I didn't know if we could see it well enough to even tell what it was. But on it, it's supposed to have Jesus nailed to the cross on this piece of granite, and he has hired a firm to sell that on eBay for him. And you think about $28,000 to see the mother of Jesus in a grilled cheese sandwich. How much would they pay to see Jesus on the cross on a piece of granite? But let me ask you this. How much is it worth to see Jesus lived out in a life? I think the world would die for that. The world longs for that. To see people who will embody and live like Jesus. People who are not here to take, but are here to give. Would you take out your songbooks and turn to the hymn of encouragement? In just a few weeks, Brother Vaughn is going back to India. And when he travels there, I think one of the first things he'll be reminded of when he steps off that plane is all of the idolatry that's in the world. You know, we read about that in the Bible, especially places like 1 and 2 Corinthians, but that's not easy for us to relate to. And I remember when I got to go over there one time, I remember getting off the plane and, grinding to your hotel. You get up the next morning, you start traveling around town, and immediately what you notice is you notice all the idols everywhere. All the temples to these idols. And some of them are massive, standing, over 100 feet in the air. We can be tempted to look at nations like that and look down our noses and say, look at those idol-worshipping peoples. Yet it's interesting that when a lot of those nations look at us, they see us as idol-worshippers. Not bowing down to statues, Hindu gods, or to Buddha, or someone along those lines. But they see us as bowing down to our stuff. Because you see, an idol is basically whatever I devote myself to, whatever I give my allegiance to, whatever it is I serve and live for can be my idol. And so I want to challenge each of us to think about what our idols are. These people in Nehemiah 5 had some idols. It was their stuff. What about us? I'm going to tell you, a lot of times in sermons, we're looking at faults and things we need to change. And I do think there are some of us this morning that need to make changes in this area. I think there are some of us who are controlled by our stuff. But I also want to say this, that as I look around this room, I see a lot of people who are not controlled by their stuff. And far too often in sermons, we're always looking for what's wrong, and we don't spend enough time looking for what's right. And I want you to know that I see a lot of what is right in the world in you. I see your giving hearts and your giving spirits. In our Bible class time, Brother Stevens is going to talk about our budget for next year. My experience in 4 years has been when there was a need, the Graymere membership met it. And so what I want to say to those of you who are trying to live like Nehemiah, God bless you. And remember that God will and is blessing you. Keep on keeping on. But as we look among ourselves this morning, if some of us realize, hey, I'm living a little more like the people in the first part of Nehemiah chapter 5 than like Nehemiah himself, then let's make some changes. If Jesus is the Lord of my life and I truly give everything to Him, then it's very easy to live like Nehemiah because it's not my stuff anyway. It's all His stuff and I'll use it however He wishes. If you need to give your life to Christ, we're going to sing an invitation song. The reason we do that is to encourage us to think about our relationship with God. And I want us to think about how much He gave for us. And He asks us in return to just give Him our hearts. If you need to come and express a loving heart, express faith through repentance, confession, and baptism, we'd love to share in that with you. And for those of us who are Christians who realize that we've given ourselves to the world instead of to Christ, that we're living for ourselves instead of others, let's make a change. And if that needs to be public, then let's help and get each other through this together as we stand and sing.